Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for March 3rd, 2009. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. In this episode, we'll discuss a paper published in the February 17th issue of Science Signaling about the mechanism of the autophosphorylation event that controls FGF receptor activity. The work we'll be talking about was performed in Joseph Schlesinger's lab at Yale University. I spoke with Dr. Schlesinger about the research. Welcome, Dr. Schlesinger.
Thank you.
The paper that you've just published in Science Signaling is about autophosphorylation in the fibroblast growth factor receptor. Could you tell us a little bit about what the fibroblast growth factor receptor is and what it does?
So there are FGFs, or fibroblast growth factors, the ligands of fibroblast growth factor receptors, or FGF receptor. Let's call them FGF for the ligands and FGF receptor, or FGFR, for the receptors. FGF is the largest group of growth factors. There are 23 of them, and they do a lot of different things. Extremely important during embryonic development and during normal homeostasis. They actually control critical processes in virtually every organ and tissue. They activate four receptor tyrosine kinases called FGF receptor 1, 2, 3, and 4. The one we have studied in this particular case is called FGF receptor 1. Diversity is enhanced through alternative splicing. So it's a very, very large and complicated network of signaling molecules which regulate a lot of things. Many of these receptors are mutated in various diseases. Gain-of-function mutations are responsible for severe skeletal dysplasia. For example, achondroplasia, the most common form of human dwarfism, is caused by point mutation in one of these receptors, FGF receptor 3. By the way, all these mutations which are leading to severe dysplasias are gain-of-function mutations. There are also quite a few gain-of-function mutations in several cancers, in, for example, bladder carcinoma and in multiple myeloma. So this is a very interesting biological system with a lot of diversity, a lot of activity to explore.
Since mutations that affect the kinase activity then result in disease phenotypes, for example, then it's very important to regulate the amount of activity of an FGFR?
Yes. In general, this is a rule which is general for all receptor tyrosine kinase. If you have too much of a signal, usually, for FGF receptors and other receptor tyrosine kinase, this usually leads to cancer or other developmental diseases. If you have not enough of a signal, then you have severe developmental disorders. So they must be very, very, very well-tuned.
Since it's clearly very important to regulate the amount of signaling through a tyrosine kinase, like the FGFR, how is the activity of FGFRs regulated?
Okay, so it's basically similar to other receptor tyrosine kinase. So what happens usually is that the receptor is first autophosphorylated. They're all enzymes. And the best substrate of every receptor tyrosine kinase is usually the receptor itself. So there are autoregulatory sites in FGF receptor. In this one, it's called tyrosine 653 and 654. And once they become phosphorylated, the enzymatic activity is dramatically enhanced, like 500-fold. And it was thought that subsequently, the receptor becomes phosphorylated. And this is now well known, that every receptor is not only an enzyme, it's also a platform for which signaling molecules through sarcohomology 2, SH2 domain, PTP domain are recruited to assemble a signaling complex. So it was thought that first receptor is activated and then signaling occurs after recruitment. How is a receptor activated? The ligand normally induces receptor dimerization, which juxtaposes the catalytic domain and allows phosphorylation to occur in trans. However, in the case of FGF receptor, there are two ligands, FGFs and heparin sulfate proteoglycans. Each of them alone is not sufficient to activate the receptor. You need both of them. And some time ago, we determined the crystal structure of this ternary complex, and we now know how this happens. So basically, dimerization, autophosphorylation, enhanced tyrosine kinase activity, recruitment of signaling molecules, and phosphorylation and activation of signaling molecules. That's basically the steps.
The autophosphorylation event that FGFR undergoes is an intermolecular autophosphorylation?
Yeah, inter. So once molecules form a dimer and they become phosphorylated, the question is whether phosphorylation occurs within each protomer alone. In that case, it will be called intramolecular or cis autophosphorylation, or whether within the context of a dimer, one receptor of a molecule phosphorylates a neighboring receptor. In that case, it's a reaction in trans or intermolecular phosphorylation. The latter is what we see in all receptor tyrosine kinases. It's always occurring in trans or otherwise intermolecular process.
Once this autophosphorylation event is triggered by the binding of the ligands, then how is that autophosphorylation event regulated?
Okay, so this is the question the paper tried to address. Now, we are not working in this system now with an intact receptor. We're just working on the kinase domain. And we use sufficient concentration of the kinase, so it just is spontaneously activated. So it's not normal regulation. You will not be able to do this experiment with the intact receptor's membrane in cells. So this is a reductionist approach with its limitation, but it has an advantage, and the key advantage is that you can do it. Not with ease, but still you can do it. So basically, when you increase the concentration of the receptor, they become phosphorylated. And as I mentioned to you, all kinases have this, what it's called activation loop, which is a region in the kinase which is involved with autoinhibition in most cases. And as mentioned before, it was overthought that these sites there are first to be phosphorylated, and then sites which are required for recruitment signaling molecules are phosphorylated, which allows then program of recruitment and coordinated signaling following recruitment. Now, sometimes a few years ago, this is a paper that was published earlier, we have used sophisticated methods such as mass spectrometry and detailed kinetic analysis to show that although there are two sites in the activation loop, there is one site which is phosphorylated first, and then many other sites which are not involved in activation are phosphorylated sequentially. The second site, which is required for activity, is phosphorylated number 5 or number 6, depends on the mutant that you're using. So we came up with a model that actually activation of kinase is a three-stage process. The first stage is activation following the first site phosphorylation, tyrosine 653, and then sites which are involved in recruitment are being phosphorylated. So based on that, we speculated that recruitment is occurring immediately after partial activation is taking place. And then the molecules become recruited, and then there is another level of activation through phosphorylation of tyrosine 654 in the activation loop, and then when the receptor is fully primed, it phosphorylates the substrate.
Your group then had formulated this model that there was a three-step mechanism for how FGFR is autophosphorylated.
And perhaps other receptors.
And is that then the model that you tested in this paper?
Okay, so then the question is, how come this happens? How come, and first of all, what's the mechanism? And second thing is, does it have a biological role? So we first tested the mechanism. And the question is, how do you obtain this very nice sequential order and this very nice selectivity, considering there are so many possibilities, you know, you can calculate when you have six sites, there are really hundreds of possibilities in terms of the order, and it's always the same thing. So what is the mechanism? So we devised a scheme to study the process, and there are all different types of mechanisms that can lead to such a very clear order. One of them is maybe the different phosphorylation sites have different binding affinity. This will be reflected in the so-called CAM. Second one, that it's all kinetic. Everything is controlled by the kinetic aspect of the enzymatic reaction. So the conclusion was that the process is driven by kinetic consideration in which both the immediate sequence surrounding the phosphorylation site and its context within the three-dimensional structure play a role in terms of the rate of the phosphorylation. So this was one of the conclusions. And the second conclusion was, well, does it have any biological role? Mm-hmm. Now, this is very difficult to, although we can change the order, but it will be very difficult to study, say, change the order and then ask the question, what happens in cells? We decided to look into a mutation which is oncogenic, which was identified in a human glioblastoma. And we also show in the manuscript that actually when you express it in cells, it's oncogenic in vitro. So this is probably most likely an oncogenic mutation. Then when we measured the order of autophosphorylation of the mutant receptor, the order was totally scrambled. The receptor had much higher activity, and it was totally different. This would suggest that one factor which controls oncogenesis is the following. when receptors are normally regulated, there's a very well-orchestrated sequential order of partial activation, recruitment, full activation, and then phosphorylation of substrate. In the case of the oncogenic variant, they are recruited immediately because the receptor is so much active, and so recruitment should be much rapid, and the phosphorylation of the substrate is totally disorganized, if I can say. And this may contribute to the mechanism at a very molecular level for how oncogenic mutations drive cancerous growth.
Getting this great detail of knowledge about the mechanism of FGF receptor autophosphorylation and how it functions then, does that give you any insight into improving current pharmacological means for interfering with the receptor?
I believe so. And I tell you why this is probably correct. First of all, although the study deals only with FGF receptor 1, I think when you address fundamental questions, they're much more universal. And you probably can apply them for all receptor tyrosine kinase. Second thing is, we now know that all these drugs, such as Gleevec, Sutent, by the way, I was involved in the team that developed Sutent, they're very nice drugs. But after a while, resistance develops to these drugs. So the patients are very ill. They obtain the drug, they're doing very well, and after 1, 2, 3, 4 years, they develop resistance. It was found that most of the resistance occurs by mutations in the kinase domain, which somehow render the drug ineffective, yet allow catalysis to proceed. These are point mutations in the kinase domain. It is likely that this point mutation will change also the kinetics of the process. And by knowing everything we can about the fundamental issues of how these molecules are regulated, we will be able to design new drugs that will also overcome the resistance. So this, I think, is something that we cannot escape, and it's going to keep us busy for the next few years at least.
So is the idea then that you would develop new drugs to use after the current inhibitors become ineffective, after cancers develop resistance, or would you just start out with the new drug?
Well, okay, so this is a very good question, a very good point. So why would you wait? But you see, there are also rules here of FDA. You cannot try to do combination therapies before you know the side effects and the properties of the individual drug. So every drug has to be tested individually, and there are reasons why this is really the case, and then you use combination therapies. So as long as this is really the law, we'll have to get these drugs approved on an individual basis, even if they overcome the others. We think that eventually every drug will develop resistance, if not every most. But once we get each of them approved, then we can design modalities of combination therapies, like such as in the case of HIV, where the disease is quite susceptible to combination therapies.
So then the idea then would be to use a combination of drugs, to use this combinational therapy to start out a very aggressive treatment against a tumor.
Yes. I don't think it's going to be more aggressive as far as side effect, because these drugs have much fewer side effects than conventional therapies.
But more aggressive in terms of attacking the tumor in
different
multiple
levels,
ways.
Right.
Thank you for speaking with me today, Dr. Schlesinger.
Thanks a lot.
The paper we discussed is titled "The Precise Sequence of FGF Receptor Autophosphorylation is Kinetically Driven and Disrupted by Oncogenic Mutations." It was published in the February 17th issue of Science Signaling. The autophosphorylation of the FGF receptor that we just talked about is a reaction that occurs in trans, that is, one FGFR molecule phosphorylates another. Kinases can also undergo cis autophosphorylation events, and that is when a molecule phosphorylates itself. If you're interested in how cis autophosphorylation controls kinase activity, you can read a perspective by Pamela Lockhead in the January 20th issue of Science Signaling, titled "Protein Kinase Activation Loop Autophosphorylation in Cis, Overcoming a Catch-22 Situation." That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, the Science Society. Our producer is Robert Frederick. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for joining us.